Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome back our newest Tee It Up industry insider, Mike Morgan, who's also the president and CEO of Northwestern. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we wanted to delve into the industry. So much going on with the tariffs and such. And, well, recently, we featured Mike Morgan, who's the CEO and president of Northwestern. But this guy is a multi-decade veteran of the golf industry. So he's one of our newest Tee It Up industry insiders. And we're happy to have Mike on. We'll talk about Northwestern in a little bit, but Mike is certainly in the know, and we welcome him back to the show. Mike, thanks for coming back on in such a short period of time.
Keith, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me back, and excited to discuss the industry and where we're headed, and hopefully we'll get to a solution here pretty soon that everybody's happy with.
Yeah, well, so let's start with that because Mother's Day is just a few weeks away. And if you thought you're going to get your mother a golf club, maybe yes, maybe no. But with the industry going through all the tariffs and stuff, and I said the T word. I'll probably say the T word a few times throughout this show with Mike. But tariffs are not a new word to people, but not everybody quite understands, I think, who pays for the tariffs. That's obviously a surcharge, if you will, for the manufacturers and such. But how do tariffs work when you're getting your product in this case, from Asia?
Okay, so in essence, it's a tax. It's a tax that's levied on the goods coming into the country. That tax has to be paid to the government before it lands. So just before it gets to shore, I mean, you literally, it will sit out there until you make that payment. So you have to do that. Some people think, well, gee, if I placed my order prior to the tariff and it's on the water, it doesn't account for that. I mean, I'll be okay. That's not the way it works. Whenever that tariff is levied, if your product's not in the United States, that you're liable for that tariff. So when you're talking about 10%, companies can eat that pretty easily. Even a 20% is not a good situation. But obviously today, you know, we're looking at 145% tariffs currently as we talk on the radio.
Well, it's crazy. I was actually talking to a manufacturer who gets the product that manufactures in Canada and then gets distributed in the United States. And they were looking at 167%. And
wow.
Exactly. And I said, well, obviously you're going to have to, he said, yeah, but what would wholesale for us at $15 now is about $60. So, and that's if we choose to bring it into the country. And of course I out of the corner of my mouth said, you know, and I'm sure you don't dare pack a couple of, you know, vans with product to bring it in. He says, no, we don't. Because if we got caught, that would be even worse than the tariffs we would have to pay.
Correct. This is very highly regulated. So I'll give you an example, Keith, and for your listeners, just to show you how much this is impactful. So let's just say a company has $10 million in a PO that's ready to go from China. For us to bring that over and get it into the United States, that $10 million just became $24,500,000. No company is going to eat that. They just aren't going to do it. It's no baseline that's out there that allows for a company to expect cost of goods to go up 1.5%. It's 150%. It's just not something that's in your numbers. So that creates a situation where you either pass it immediately along and you bring it over and say, okay, we're going to invest in the product, bring it over, pass it along to the consumer, and that creates a really difficult position. In essence, it takes, for example, our driver that was slated to retail at $200 to really $399. It really doubles almost in overnight. It takes us from the position we wanted to be in, which was truly entry level, but entry level just moved to $400 and overnight. And the drivers that you were buying at $650 just moved to $1,000. And no company wants to have a baseline where they're having to put out a $1,000 driver at retail. So a lot of this product has been stopped in its tracks. Companies that have current inventory will fill what they can and keep their fingers crossed that this can get done quickly. And we can. It's going to delay reorders. People are not going to get the chances to get product as quickly as they hoped. It's just going to happen. It's just the world we live in right now.
All right, Mike, so you said it's going to happen. What happens? How is it going to be, I'll say, cut loose, but how are companies going to be able to bring it in at an adjusted lower price?
Well, every day we follow the tariff talks and hope and pray that this could happen, that the tariffs will the wars will end. Behind the scenes, there's negotiations going on, and we're in that same situation. And I can't say too much, except that China is certainly aware of what it's doing to their manufacturing, and they're working with those manufacturers to get them money to be able to build factories in other countries that have favorable tariffs. So they are investing in other destinations, and that's what a lot of companies are kind of hanging their hats on, is that the key manufacturers will be able to, and I know our specific manufacturer is slated to open their new facility, I won't say where, but by August 15th, and they're a key supplier to the golf industry. So when I say there's going to be delays, again, this could all change in a stroke of a pen. The president could say, listen, we know what's happening, and we're going to impose more tariffs, and it's going to be on these countries because we know what's happening. And China's trying to line up other countries to be on their side. We're trying to line up countries on our side. It's a difficult political spectrum, and we just live it day to day. But what's going to happen is you're just going to see delays in product being delivered, not right now. I mean, everybody, for the most part, with the exception of the startup companies like ourselves, who expected to have product in our warehouse by May 15th, we couldn't get it on the water and get it here before the big tariffs struck. So we have to delay what we do. What will be delayed is reorders from the companies like Titleist, TaylorMade, Callaway, Ping, whoever it is, that just simply says, we cannot pay 145% for product. We'll sit this out for a while. And I don't want to speak for them. I'm just saying that they're not going to bring it in at 145% tariffs. So you'll see delays on reorders going into retailers.
So I was talking to a retailer, actually a district manager, a regional manager for, it happened to be a big box retailer, I'll say PGA Tour Superstore. And he told me the only company thus far that has made or put out any sort of literature saying we're going to increase our prices is TaylorMade. And as of next week, the ball prices are supposed to go up for TaylorMade. But right now, that's the only name that he mentioned as far as anybody moving the needle as far as increasing their price. So that's kind of a good thing, but you know, I mean, it only takes one person to start it, right? So
right. Well, once it, you know, it depends on the company in terms of the existing inventory. You want to delay putting that out there as long as you can. TaylorMade may not have had the inventory levels that they expected to have, or maybe wanted to have for whatever reason, and Titleist, TaylorMade, Callaway, Ping, whoever else, I'm not TaylorMade, but Ping, whoever else, you know, were in a better inventory position that they felt like they could ride through for a while. But, the big hit is really pushing all the product out into the marketplace for the spring season. And that's, as you know, a huge percentage of golf is sold across this country in that March, April, May category. where you'll see it start hitting, and this is where people are starting to say, hey, look, we don't want to send these letters out. We want to delay this as long as possible because we don't want to panic retailers. We don't want to panic consumers. But it's a fact that orders are being held up over there. They don't want to bring it over at those prices, and it's got to affect you in June, July, August, September, October. It's just it's 60 days to manufacture products. It's 60 days on the water. It takes about 15 days to turn it around once you get it in the warehouses. You can do the math on it.
Yeah, that's a long time to wait on that. So you're obviously well-knowing because that's part of why you're on the show with me. But also, things are subject to change accordingly. But if somebody comes to the market with an increase, like we use TaylorMade because that's the one I was informed about. At what point do they say, oh, instead of the dozen balls costing $50, they'll then go down to $45 or closer to where they were before? How long does it take for that kind of thing to happen?
Well, it probably would, and I can't speak for TaylorMade, but right. I would say if it was in our position, and I can say it probably will by the time we get to the fourth quarter, there will be, you know, price increases for us just because we don't think the tariff will go back down to 7% for us, and even at 10%, it would be great, but we just don't see that happening quickly. So I would say that you would have to see this year flush through. I just don't think any company would probably have the ability to replenish product in their warehouses at a time that allows them to take the price down, because it's all going to happen so quickly. You got to reorder. So they may bring some over and hang on to it and sell it through at slightly higher prices, and then there'll be some back orders, and then try to get back into the right position by January of 26. It's just all up in the air, Keith. It's a tough one.
It really is, and it's very unfortunate, because if there's any time a golfing president or golf meant a lot to a president, it's the one that's in office now. So, unfortunately, a lot of the product for the golf industry is made in China, and that's certainly big press right there. So, as we're talking to Mike Morgan, Teed Up Industry Insider, also the president and CEO of Northwestern, with years in at McGregor, many decades in at Titleist, and now the head guy at Northwestern, trying to bring that back. And that is very unfortunate, because you worked so hard bringing Northwestern back at a premium discounted or beginner price, whatever term is correct there, you tell me.
Entry level.
And now you have to say, although $300 for a driver still is pretty good. I know that's not where you wanted to play, but
correct.
So it kind of, I don't say it helps you, but if I go to the store and I see a quality product that you're putting out at Northwestern versus $1,000 for, you name the big boy company, you know, I'm actually more apt to lean towards, if I need the clubs right now, to lean towards a company like Northwestern.
Exactly, and that's a great point. I just call it a sliding scale. We just become even more strengthened and emboldened as a price point alternative. You know, if you're $650 and you compare it to $200, and sometimes we think we're too inexpensive for the quality of product that we have, and internally we discuss maybe we should be a little bit more expensive in terms of retail price, just because people sometimes have a perception if it's not at a certain level at retail, it must not be very good, but we have specific reasons why we're there. Hopefully we can return to that, but if you take and you go 1,000 into 400, that's one thing. If you're 200 to 650, I'm not sure that's quite as impactful as when you get up there and you start breaking that four-digit number and that type of thing. So, yeah, we'll see where it all lands.
You're talking to Mike Morgan, Teed Up Industry Insider, President and CEO of Northwestern. We'll be back. We are pleased to spend the hour with Mike Morgan. We introduced you to him as the president and CEO a number of weeks ago, and he's just so knowledgeable, having put in a few seasons with McGregor and then a few decades plus with Titleist. And then, you know, you thought he was going to be retired and just enjoying life, and then he gets a phone call and he gets sucked back in. But you know, as the great Barney Adams said on this show and to me numerous times, don't get involved with the golf industry if you want to play more golf. So,
exactly. Well said. Well said.
Although,
and if you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, although I did get word that perhaps you did get a round of golf in recently, so that was good to hear.
You know, only because of the tariff pause. If that wasn't in place, I would not have got that round of golf in. But we're a little bit hamstrung in terms of what we can do. I'm working with retailers and trying to get them updated. Honest to goodness, where we're really focusing for our brand is spring of 2026. We just have to get the product in the warehouse, get it in at a price that we feel we can move forward with, and with our new position in a factory in a new country, that we know what that tariff is going to be at this point. That's how we have to plan our business, and we can price it accordingly, get it back a lot closer to where we want it to be. So we're excited to do that, and that's what I'm working with the key retailers right now. I'm quite frankly working on getting product samples out to the key players, letting them hit them. Once this is what really amazes people real quickly, is just that once they hit the Northwestern driver, fairway, hybrid, and irons, they're really amazed, and I don't mean this arrogantly. Please don't take it that way. Even I was surprised that it was as good as it was. I say that just because it's a pleasant surprise. But the accolades we receive from even the retailers that go out and test it and they say, that this is a really, really good product. I don't know how you guys do it for $200 at retail and on a driver, $150 on a fairway, you know, that type of thing. We basically were $350 for a set of irons that are just really solid. We're really excited about it. So hopefully we can return to those prices and offer that great quality product. And that's the project I'm working on right now, is getting more clubs in more people's hands, just so we can roll this out. Hopefully in the fall, book all the orders and get them done, and inventory in the warehouse, and really go big at the PGA Show in 26.
So what does your set that was 350 go for in today's marketplace?
Yeah, that set of irons is now at 549. If we were to bring it in, and we're just not going to do that. And there's some ways that we try to cut some costs, not on the quality of the product, but on how we would ship it and how we would assemble it. And basically, it would be assembling it ourselves versus having it assembled over there. The taxes or the tariffs are higher when you bring in finished product versus assembling it. So as we're putting together our new factory and getting production up to speed there, we have to wait until that's completed to be able to put production out at a less cost with less tariffs, because we are coming in completed versus unassembled like most other companies.
All right, but unassembled, that's the way that a lot of the fitters, the older guys who brought the components in and then put the clubs together, worked very well for them. I mean, obviously, you're going to have to beef up the staff a little bit. I remember going back to the Ping facility many, many years ago, and it was like a big garage. You know, it's like a warehouse, and you got guys just putting the clubs together. It was kind of a throwback, but that's how it was done, or how it is
done. Exactly. And quite frankly, I mean, the major players, they assemble their golf clubs. I mean, because, you know, a lot of customization goes into the major OEMs. So they assemble golf clubs. We felt like the entry-level player, maybe similar to a box set, maybe just doesn't understand different shafts, understand adjustability. We didn't want to confuse the player. Our next generation of golf club, because we know it's important to fitters to have the ability to interchange shafts and adjust some lofts, we'll have that. But our entry-level product, initially, we wanted to make it very simple, very cost-effective, and we'll be very, very cost-effective. We will not bump up much to even go to the next level with some adjustability on the metals. And our iron is going to be pretty cool what we're going to be able to do with that. So we're excited about where we're going to go with it. But currently, it was just, honestly, it was a situation where it was a little simpler for us as a startup company to bring it in assembled and just ship it through a 3PL for the first 6 months until we got our facility up and running. So once we get that going, that's going to help us. It's a little less expensive than using a 3PL. It's less expensive from a tariff perspective. So that's going to help us get our price down. So we'll be close to where we want to be.
With Mike Morgan, we'll be back.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we are back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with Tee It Up industry insider Mike Morgan, who also happens to be the president and CEO of Northwestern Golf, but a very knowledgeable guy. Why? Because he's older than he sounds, nearly a half century in the golf industry. I normally wouldn't do that to friends. Sorry about that, Mike. No.
That's just... fine. It's a fact. I take it with a grain of salt.
You shouldn't. Hey, come on. You put your hours in. You got more than 10,000 going on. So many more than 10,000. So you deserve it. These Northwestern clubs, just Northwestern is a company, and I know you've been getting this kind of response. It's just kind of I mentioned the word throwback in one of the previous segments, but that's kind of what Northwestern is. Everybody has their first club story, or those who haven't been around long enough, it's great to be able to see Northwestern come back. But it's not just you're throwing something together. You got together with a top-notch designer and put these clubs, elevated them. Because, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you, as we go through this segment, I actually found, it's not my original set. I have that to the side. But I found Thunderbird 9-iron that had been cut down, and I don't know why I had that, but it was soldered together. I'm saving this one for you. Yeah, they had soldered it because I guess it must have split or something, and I have no idea where I got it from. But I'm one of those collectors. We'll call it collectors. So
sure, but, that's cool.
But anyway, it had the little Thunderbird logo on there.
Right.
But so you went through a process, obviously, of wanting to put top quality product into the market, not just anything out there. What was the process like to choose the designer that you went with?
Well, it was pretty simple, Keith. We had my partner, Joe Altamonte, also previously owned a company called Dynacraft and also Pal Joey. So one of the reasons our partnership worked really well is I tend to come from a sales marketing background and promotional background. And Joe is more in terms of the manufacturing, the sourcing, and understanding that part of the business. That's not something I participated in. He didn't really do the sales marketing side. So when we met with some of the key retailers in our very early weeks of putting this concept together, they said, man, this is really a really good opportunity for you guys because you have a great mix. You guys really mix well together and the concept of what you want to do. And we quite frankly just took guidance from a couple of key big boy retailers about what we had and asked them to sign a non-disclosure to say, this is what we're looking to do. Love to have some input. And it was all about really high quality product where they could make 50 points on a retail type situation if that was possible, and help them move the needle there versus where the major OEMs don't quite get them those kinds of margins. So we selected, and Joe was the guy that Joe just said, hey, listen, I know Jeff Sheets and he's fantastic. So it really started with Joe bringing Jeff Sheets on. I said, man, get him on the phone. And so we got to talking, and he was really excited to bring back Northwestern, as is every partner that we get involved with. They just say, we absolutely love what Northwestern was and what it is going to become. So they understand, everybody understands it's a necessity in this marketplace. We need a quality manufacturer delivering product at an entry-level price point that someone who's coming into the game of golf can go, I can do this. And I warn people, I just say, I've said this to some of the industry veterans, I said, you want us to do very well, because the top golf player coming out who looks at the price of golf and says, my gosh, I mean, I thought I was really going to want to play this sport, but I look at the cost of equipment, I look at the cost of a club membership, I look at a greens fee, and it's really expensive. This sport is very expensive. And I don't want them to go buy a kayak and say, I'm going to do something different. We want to hold golfers that come out of simulation golf or top golf, hold them to get to the next level. We don't want them to leave. And that's one of the ways that we think we can be effective. And I've told several industry veterans, I said, you want us to do well, because we'll graduate them to the next level for you.
You have to keep them in the game. Getting into the game is one thing, right? I for years and years, National Golf Foundation gave us statistics. Millions of golfers coming into the game, millions of golfers leaving the game because of cost and time and everything goes along with it. And then companies get together and they start, and Top Flight comes out, or Top Golf comes out, mm-hmm. and some of the other ones, Drive Shack, and there's a number mm-hmm. of them. But
exactly.
You know, it gets people a little acclimated with the game. But the rub is, those are food and beverage places with golf clubs. It's not like
correct.
Your golf facility and here's a sandwich. You know, that type.
Correct.
So it's different. So, I mean, obviously, it hasn't worked out as well as a company like Callaway thought, because they're offloading the Top Flight portion of their business. So that kind of tells you. But and I'm not sure where Mr. Callaway would come in. I mean, he's was a marketing genius. So, and he's part of the reason the drivers are $1,000 now, because he got somebody to spend $650 on it. You know, and I say that partially because I'm reading his autobiography, but having him on the show. Obviously decades ago, so I'm aging myself a little bit as well, right there with my friend Mike Morgan. You know, it was interesting because, you know, it's become so much more smoke and mirrors now than it ever was. But you want to play a quality club, you're not sure. And if you're just getting into the game, it is so, so difficult. That's part of why we do part of what we do on this show, to introduce people to equipment and to get them understanding, you know, the loft difference and you know, because there's a big learning curve when it comes to the game of golf. It's a great game, but you know, that stands on its own. But there's so many moving parts when you talk about getting the to be able to play a game of golf.
No question, and I will tell you that I met with some key people at Top Golf, and I asked the question, what percentage of your players do you feel like actually move from this type of a golf situation where you can just come in and mostly socialize and have fun versus, you know, taking it seriously and going and investing in the game and playing the game? I said, what percentage of players do you think? They said, no, we track that. So it came out to, it varies, you know, facility to facility, but on average, it's around 10 to 12% is what I was told. So if a facility is putting, let's say, 100,000 golfers through their individual Top Golf or whatever brand they have, franchise they have, you know, you're looking at a pretty high percentage of players that are coming out and looking at, I'm going to go to the next level and take this to the golf course. So that, again, the reason I pursued that is because that's entry level. That's coming into the game. Now, people who go to Top Golf, that's expensive to start with. So they're not always in a position where they can't afford, you know, top tier equipment in terms of pricing. But when you tack that onto, I'm not sure that's really where I want to be. I'm just wanting to check this out and test the waters. And then their buddies are members of a club, or they play at the, you know, really nice golf course, and the greens fees are $150. And you know, you just look at it and go, gosh, you know, we want to keep this player in the game. Let's give them some alternatives. And that's where we fit in.
Yeah, it's interesting. My family nicely gave me a birthday party at Topgolf a few years ago. And mm-hmm. I've been to a number of different facilities, including the great one down in Orlando. So, of course, we're there, and there's probably maybe 10 adults. I mean, but it was in excess of $500 for a couple hours of eating, drinking, and trying to swing some clubs, you know? They sit there going, like, I'm like, thank you, family, but I wish I hadn't found out the number because...
It's not inexpensive, and people think, well, we'll just go and do that for a couple hours. By the time you invest the food and beverage, which is where they make their money, and I think that's where Callaway, you know, got caught a little bit with a surprise for them was that food and beverage, you know, was going up so quickly during COVID, and it just escalated the costs of those portions of Topgolf. They could kind of control equipment and maybe, you know, some other aspects of it. But as far as the food and beverage, that was something that really just kind of escalated very quickly. And I think that hurt them in that aspect. But it still is, you know, a very popular venue to get people into the game of golf. And I applaud every one of these. And I think Tiger's new simulation golf is TGL League, I think it is. I mean, all of that is just driving interest in golf, and I think you know this, but you know, for the first time, at least in my time frame in the industry, which, as you alluded to, goes back a little ways, you look at National Golf Foundation numbers, and you've got golfers for the first time in a category of 18 to 35 playing more rounds of golf for the first time versus 35 to 75. And that's, in my lifetime, I've never known that to happen. So basically, you've got more players coming into the game. It's kind of cool to be in the game now, lots of reasons. And I think we're positioned, just from a selfish perspective, really well, because we're going to position ourselves a lot towards that type of player. We'll market that direction for sure. But it's interesting because 18 to 35 was not a hot demographic for many, many years. You were hoping to get players into the game, and you were hoping and praying. But I have grandsons that say, hey, listen, I got to play golf. I mean, all my friends are playing golf, and this is fantastic. My son works in an office where there's 10 guys working in there, and 9 of them play golf. I mean, they just love it. So it's hip to be a golfer now. And that 18 to 35 demographic is driving a lot of rounds. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm glad you said that because there is a bit of, I wouldn't say peer pressure, but it's like, why wouldn't you be out there? Because if you play golf the right way, then you're out enjoying yourself. And if you're, right. You know, as long as you're not, now, I'm a bit more of a traditionalist, although I do have a golf speaker that was sent, actually probably different ones, that have been sent to me, and different things that would, you know, you can enjoy if it's just a couple people, but, you know, you don't want to go around with a foursome and blasting the music and all that kind of stuff. It's a bit distracting, but it doesn't have to be like right. The pros and you know, when they're hitting the ball. You wish it was like
exactly.
That. You know?
Exactly.
I've hit a few crickets.
No, and I think that's really, really good. Golf will evolve, in my opinion, over the next 20 years from and live golf is love them or hate them or whatever your opinions are. We're on that front end of kind of changing how we look at professional golf. And it's doesn't have to be khaki pants or bright pants and white shirts, whatever it is. I mean, you don't have to be like that. You can have shorts, you can have music playing. It's about concerts. It's about having fun. You can do it. And I think that's driven some interest definitely at the younger level. And I think that'll impact who that golfer will be 20 years from now. It'll be more of a social setting, less formal and more fun. And I just think now at my age, I don't get to go out and play as much as I'd like. I'm in a business that doesn't allow that, but I really enjoy golf more now, even though I can't shoot the scores that I'd like to shoot because I don't play as much and I've aged. But I've really enjoyed the social part of getting out, smoking a cigar, having a couple of beers, and being with my friends. And I learned to enjoy golf in a different way. And I believe these young people coming into the game, they're coming in the right way. They're coming in not as serious, I'm going to strangle this golf course and shoot 74 today or 71 or whatever their goal is. They're just saying, I'm going to go out and have a good time. And if I play well, I play well. If not, I'm going to have a good time. And I love that.
Yeah, I'm with my new golf buddy, Mike Morgan, on Tee It Up with Keith Jones, Tee It Up Industry Insider. My kind of guy. Sit there, have a little beverage, a little dope beverage, smoke the cigar. Yes, indeed. I'm telling you. And I tell people I have done more praying on the golf course than I ever did in church. It is just the way it is. But it is a way of life and such. But, Mike, from the Northwestern standpoint, as an entry-level golf company, how do you convince those guys that are, you know, in their early 20s that want to hit it 8,000 miles and have this kind of macho kind of approach, or a lot of testosterone going and things like that? How do you convince them that your company is a good place to get their clubs?
Well, we know the equipment. It's a great question, Keith. We know the equipment is competitive against really anything that's out there. Our goal is to have the best marketing campaign, and we're excited about. I just hired someone this last week that I'm really excited about that will take us where we want to go. And it's really about having the right social influencers, having the correct people in place to take your message to that group. And we don't want to overlook ladies, seniors. Ladies, by the way, is a huge portion. I've heard as high as 30% of the new golfers coming in are female. So that's fantastic. That's fantastic for us. We have a great line of ladies golf clubs at price points that they can afford. And it's exciting to see the demographic of ladies and couples and just social golf coming into the game. But to answer your question, it's the marketing. It's having the right influencers in place that say, hey, look, this is a hip brand, and that's up to us to get that done, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, he's not going to go with me like an original. I'm one of the original influencers, being a national radio host. Look at me, putting out my peacock feathers right there. If we were with Mike Morgan, indeed, it's true. He's laughing, but he knows what I'm talking about. No, it's just like everything else. Things change, and this is what happens. But Mike Morgan went from CEO and president of a golf company to now a Tee It Up industry insider. Because he's so darn knowledgeable, if you couldn't tell, it is crazy that way. And we're going to cut him loose to go full bore in our next segment as we get ready to close out the show. But Northwestern is an up and coming, and it's are you okay with having to wait to spring of 26 to have the relaunch?
Yes, we've talked about it. We have a great position in the sense that. With our new marketing, we weren't quite where we wanted to be from a marketing team perspective, Keith. So we went out and found someone who we felt this is really, it was recommended to me, and we did some research, and you'll see it coming here shortly. We want to launch our website direct to consumer really in June. You can pre-order golf clubs.
With Mike Morgan, we'll be back to wrap up the show. And it has been a fast hour spending it with our new Tee It Up Industry Insider, Mike Morgan. You might know him as the president and CEO of Northwestern, but they're not really a company yet. They're still trying to figure out what they're going to do. So. So you mentioned retailers earlier in the show, and I want to circle back there. So obviously, brick and mortar is a place that Northwestern wants to be. It's not going to be just direct to consumer off the internet.
Correct. So, as I said early on, we had met with a couple of key brick-and-mortar retailers and also strong internet retailers and presented our concept of what we wanted to do and felt like this was something the market needed. And there was no question in the rooms that we met with the people that this is really a home run. This is something that really needs to happen. So we knew that. And quite frankly, one of the key things we wanted to do was allow retailers that aren't necessarily big, I don't want to say big box, but they're more independent retailers who are looking for opportunities. They don't quite get the deals that maybe the big boys get. So we wanted to work with our first couple, 3 years with about 200 independent retailers. That's who we kind of focused on was, hey, this is the group that really needs what we have. And then we'll graduate from there. We'll build our brand through these key retailers, but they're not quite at that highest level of, let's say, a Dick's Sporting Goods or some of the others. I mean, a PGA Superstore, something like that. I mean, we just were not going to be ramped up with enough inventory to be able to handle. Because from a PO perspective, if you're just going to do a Dick's Sporting Goods order where you say you got 847 stores, if you just say, listen, I'm just going to do 10,000 per store, I've done the math 28 times, you look at it and go, okay, well, that's going to be $18.7 million for a season with a 1.5 season turn. So we fill it in just 50% of what we ship to start with, and that's basically $15,000. I mean, it's nothing. And you sit in a situation and you look at it and you go, okay, well, for us to do a percentage of the volume that we would like to do, we can't do it. We can't grow that fast. The quickest way to go out of business is to grow too fast. And we were just going to manage our business. So the key retailers for us coming out of the box in 2026 are the independent retailers that we are excited that we're working with. And we think that's a key portion of it for us.
Well, Mike, I think that's very important, and obviously you've done a lot of due diligence and a lot of research and such, but the big guys will come. It's like they build it and they will come kind of mentality, and that's the case, because when something is hot or white hot, then the big guys want it too. So, you know.
Correct.
So the fact that you've got an opportunity to get penetration wherever it is, as far as a golf retailer, is paramount and so important, because over the years, it was interesting you said about getting too successful too quickly. I have had so much product come across my desk over the years, really good product, and those companies are no longer around because they couldn't catch the lightning in the bottle. They could supply and demand ate them alive.
It is the hardest thing, Keith. I mean, I meet with banks. I meet with different financial people to allow us to go get even, you know, larger. I mean, I've got some really big players that want to get involved, and it's not something that I want to sell specifically Northwestern to. It's making private labeling, white labeling product for some bigger partners. It's tough for new companies coming in. They want you to prove yourself first. And so you have to grow. I mean, you literally have to put a business plan out there. And we just finished the performance that our financial partners want. And it just shows us growing in increments, you know, of $10 million a year, $15 million a year over the next 5 years. Could we do potentially 35 to 50 million? Yeah, probably, you know, within 2 years. But we don't have the infrastructure to do that. And we don't want to be out there and that people go, listen, my first impression is not very good because you didn't, you know, you advertised it, you promoted it, but you didn't deliver it. And we don't want to be in that position. I'd rather undersell it and over deliver it. And that's our mantra. And that's why we're taking our time and we're picking our spots. We're picking our key retailers.
Mike, thanks for coming back on the show, especially as your new appointed Teed Up Industry Insider. But Mike Morgan, I guess on Tietam Keith Jones, we're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. You can't do it with Northwestern right now, but practice, take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.